Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Recording 3, 2, 1.
Hello, fam, and welcome to Walk in Circles podcast, where Circle C Farm owner Nicole Cruz and me, Carl Fiadini, founder of Walk and Talk podcast, get into what propels the business of agriculture and food. Nicole, you know, last time we did our podcast, we were talking about the looming food shortage and how things are going to get pretty tight. I mean, like eggs are ridiculously priced. I saw them in New York for like 10 or 12 bucks a carton. What are you thinking about this?
I'm thinking that that's probably going to stay that way for a while. I think with the amount of birds that have been euthanized due to the avian flu, the supply and demand issues are going to still stay pretty high. I think when you're talking about the commodity market.
Right. Because I've seen eggs from local farms actually real cost, like the pricing wasn't that terrible. Why is that?
Well, I think there's a couple different factors. When you're dealing directly with a farmer, one, you know what you're getting and you know where you're getting it. But I also think that you're going to see some variation in pricing based on geographic region. That's definitely something to keep in mind, because like I was looking at Facebook. As you know, I'm on like most people are, and I'm kind of going through the different agriculture and the farming groups that I'm in, and I'll see different pricing. I think that people are also becoming very aware of the fact that it's not, if you want a quality egg, you're going to get what you pay for.
Right.
If that makes any sense. So like, there's a lot of things going on in my head about the whole egg thing. And you know, I went to a big box store and I saw people clamoring for eggs at $4.99 and $5.99 for like an 18 count. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of pushing past one another. And I'm like, okay, first of all, they're still going to be there. Just because the palate isn't completely full, don't freak out. But I was kind of taken aback by some of the people saying, oh, you know, these eggs are getting really expensive. And I'm walking behind them is the farmer who is selling eggs. I sell my eggs for $8 a dozen because that's what it costs me to produce them.
Right.
It's, you know, it's a quality egg. But people, I think, are still, I think that people are still not completely in touch with what it actually costs to grow and raise the food that they consume. So while the prices are going up, the prices are going up from the local farmers because our feed stuff is going up, our fuel is going up, our labor is going up, like all of the other things are going up. Not the actual egg itself, but all the things that lead up to providing that egg. In the commodity system, while the prices are going up, they're not necessarily paying the farmers more. They're just raising the prices of the eggs. So all of the farmers that are working on the back end, unlike myself, because I'm direct to consumer, but the farmers that are working with the big chains or the box stores are working at that level are still only being paid pennies an egg, even though their expenses have gone up. So there's a disconnect of what's going on right now, of what's happening, what's really happening, and what's causing and what's really causing some of these things.
Well, what's the
hype? And it's not just it.
I want to, like, so if somebody's listening to this and they're saying, well, all right, great. What actually is the problem? What's the, so there's real problems, but then there's hype, right? So what's the, what are the challenges that are made up? They're not exactly direct.
Well, this is personal opinion. I'm just going to preface it like that. I'm not quite sure that the quantity of hens that are being euthanized for avian flu is really all avian flu. I'm not quite sure that what I'm seeing makes a lot of sense in some ways. So there's a lot of layers to this, Carl. There's the supply and demand dynamic. There's the inflation component to the actual things that it costs to create the egg, which are legitimate. I think there's a lot facilitating the hype behind it. Also, kind of like the toilet paper issue. You know, to some degree, if you create enough stress around something and you create enough of a frenzy, people are going to go out. It antagonizes the whole pricing structure from of the larger scale systems. When you're talking about farmers, small farmers, local farmers, that's a whole different issue. Because what people don't really realize is that farmers most often are paying retail for all the products and supplies that they're getting to grow what they are growing or raise what they're raising. But yet everyone's demanding a lower cost for the actual item. They want to sell it, or they want to be able to buy it from you at a wholesale price or at a reduced price, with a complete disconnect and an understanding of the fact that most farmers are paying retail in the stores to get those supplies and materials. Like, so what it's costing us is not a reduced amount that it's costing us to produce that item, but everybody's asking for us to take a hit so that they can get a cheaper product or a cheaper egg. But it's like, do you want me to be here next week or next month? You know, we've got to cover the cost.
A lot of people, how long does it take to actually raise the bird?
Okay. So excellent question, because I, as a matter of fact, I was going to bring that up. I was scrolling through social media and there was another farmer that did a really great job at laying out the whole thing of, hey, yes, eggs are hard to come by. Yes, eggs have gotten more expensive. But before you run out and you go buy yourself chickens, you better make sure you know what you're getting into. Because, like, for example, the breed, because I have several thousand mature laying hens right now. And I have just over 2,000 younger pullets that should hopefully start laying inside of the next month. But it's taken me six and a half, 7 months to get them to the point where they're laying. So, And those are these are production hens. These aren't just they're beautiful and they're wonderful. But the ones that sometimes people gravitate to are what they call the egg layers, the ones that lay the really pretty green and the blue, those eggs.
Right.
And those breeds can take as much as 8 and 9 months before they start laying an egg.
That's a long time.
What people,
right. Yeah. That's a long time. And you have to, so you have to feed the bird, right? Yeah. Explain. I was going to say, cause I'm not going to trample all up in your, so explain how that works.
All up in my chickens. So first of all, you have all up in my hens. Yeah. In my nest boxes. So you've got to have a hatchery that you have identified. And once you identify the hatchery, then you need to identify the breed of chickens that you would like based upon your circumstances, your geographic region, your temperatures, the personality of the chickens, and then you also have to make sure, actually before that or simultaneously, you need to make sure you have the space for the grow out, depending on how you're going to do it, whether you're going to have them out on pasture like we do 24/7, 365, which takes a whole different setup and dynamic with other materials and resources and labor versus a hothouse or a closed inside temperature controlled space. You got to make that decision as well. So then once you've got those things in mind, then you get your chicks. So when your chicks get there, for the first 7 to 8 days, maybe 9 days, depending upon the development of the chicks, you've got to keep them warm at roughly 98 to 100, 105 degrees, somewhere in that range. So that's a responsibility you have as they grow, obviously, until they are ready to lay. You have all of your feeding costs and expenses and just health and wellness of that chicken or that chick. Once they start laying, you also have to then make sure that you have your nest boxes, your setup, your transition from a starter feed to a grower feed or to a layer feed. So you've got to take that into account because you have different protein levels that are needed. And then from there, depending on what you want to do with your eggs, you have to make sure that you're appropriately licensed, insured. You have the materials for washing according to your state requirements. You know, you've got all these other things going on that you have to make sure that you have done, do, or in compliance for. So it's not just
so in the, for the, go get a chick for the and life and for the life of the bird, right? How many eggs are expected in that life?
Well, it depends on your breed. Some will lay without quoting, I have to go back to my notes, but you've got some breeds that'll lay 288 days a year. You've got some breeds that'll lay 250 days a year. You have some of your more novelty breeds that will lay less than that.
And how many eggs come out like a day? Like what's the expectation there? Or am I asking a privy question?
No. That's a great question. So in theory, everyone assumes that every chicken will lay an egg every day. And in theory, that could be the case, but not necessarily. So depending upon the weather, depending upon the chicken, the breed, all those things, you're probably looking at 4 to 5 eggs a week. You may have some that lay every day, but you also have some hens that may take a day off.
And I never actually realized that. So, all right.
Yeah.
I believe it or not, crazy as it sounds. About an egg a day, and you said about 250 days a year is what you said ish, yeah, give or take, plus or minus.
Most of them average between like 250 and 288, 290 a year.
And what's the cost per bird for their lifetime?
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Uh, Well, it would depend on the breed. It would depend upon your cost of, let's say, just your basic cost of feed. So we let our layers lay until they naturally expire. So we do have some laying hens that are laying 3, 4, 5 years. I'd have to go back to some of my notes to nail it down, but
because it's
you know, you're probably talking
it's not
a few
cheap.
Hundred. I mean, oh no, it's not cheap because now the cost of feed is anywhere from $17 to $20 for a 50-pound bag, and depending on how many chickens, you know, you kind of have to run the math. But you know, if it costs you a few hundred dollars over the course of their life, that's just the feed component.
Yeah, it doesn't account for it doesn't account for your the mortgage on your property. It doesn't account for the
correct.
You know, the your electric, and it doesn't none of those things. Mm-hmm. The you know, your fixed or your variables. It's a you're not you know you're that's not in there. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
your some of your other costs. Some of the costs are going like your feed is you know going up or down up it'll, mostly, right? I mean, so.
Yeah. And it'll also vary depending on what you're feeding. Some people may feed some basic scratch grains. Some people may do an organic layer. Some people may do, you know, they may do their own private blend. You know what I mean? Like, so it really depends on what your resources. And then there's some people that are advocates of just feed them scraps, that they're more than sufficiently able to be nutritionally balanced as a hen if you just feed them scraps, and they do produce and, you know, a whole variety of whatever they're feeding.
But then they don't live as long, right?
No, I mean, I'd have to go do comparative data on that, but there's a lot of people that will throw a feed and throw, you know, their table scraps or their lettuces and their carrots, you know what I mean? All their produce composting type thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, so we got off on a little bit of a vein, you know, a little bit of a little side path here, getting a little deep on the eggs. But you know, the reality is, yeah. It takes a lot of effort. There's a lot of work, a lot of money to produce.
A lot of time.
To produce these birds, and ultimately to get eggs from them.
Yes.
So, but if we're gonna kind of backtrack to the shortage part, like you're saying, like, yeah, the eggs really not going to be necessarily short, but going to be expensive because our costs are going up.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not to sound punish, but that's what's feeding the dynamic right now.
Yeah,
is that you have all of these expenses that are going up, and there's only a certain point at which a farmer or a business can absorb those costs without not being able to remain in business.
And therein lies where the shortage would come from.
Right, exactly. So now you have a pass-through of those prices, which, you know, makes sense from any dynamic. And I think everybody understands that, you know, conceptually, intellectually, financially. What I think the biggest issue is that people are being smacked from every angle. And food is really not something you can live without. I mean, you can shorten your drive to and from this location. You can reduce the amount of fuel you're using. You can be more conscientious or differently conscientious on where your expenses are going, you know, for things that are non-food related. And, you know, you can make adjustments in your personal life as to what entertainment or things that you engage in. But the fact of the matter is you're going to have to eat. So now you've got to make decisions or choices based upon the math of it. And so I think that's where people are starting to get really frustrated, is because they're seeing prices go up because they're not going down on the backside. And they're just trying to figure out, how am I going to do all of these things and still eat healthfully and be able to feed my children or my family in a way that isn't going to compromise them so they don't end up becoming sick. You know, so there's so many factors and so much stress associated with it that is definitely impacting, I think, people's frustration level and tolerance with costs. And things that are so simple but so nutrient dense, like an egg, because eggs are universal to pretty much every age group. So yeah, it's not like something particular group is eating, I'm assuming.
Right. And so when people are talking, so in general terms, and just people talking, or in a, you know, social media comment section, and you know, people, you know, they may be talking about quote unquote the shortages, right? You don't really,
right.
you don't think reverse engineer that to figure out what the shortage, where it comes from. Like, why is there a shortage? right? You're like, well, if I go to my McDonald's, there's a double cheeseburger. What do you mean we're shortage? What does that even mean? But if the cost of goods, supplies and whatnot go up too much, that's where the farmer says, this is no longer worth it. And I'm not going to lose money to do this. So then what do? We shut the farm and then we sell the farm. And the people who are buying the farm right now would be, you know, your government. And I don't, you know, that from what I see, like it's like that in that kind of a direction, not to, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think the right people are buying the land. No bueno.
Well, but the thing is that, but Carl, even go back to it from the standpoint of the majority of the hens that this is impacting the general population for consumption for eggs has to do with the hothouse industrialized commodity group. It's not talking about those of us that are farming and pasture raised. I mean, I have wild game come and go on my property at all times. I have birds migrating on their normal migration patterns. And we've been doing this now on this particular property for 7 years, plus my little farm for several years before that. So I just kind of stop and think, you know, so a lot of it has to do and needs to be kept in perspective relative to where this is happening. You know, those of us who are pasture raised farms, we're conscientious of aerial predators, or we're conscientious of birds in motion anyway. But we're also, at least for us down here in Florida, we had the benefit of the beautiful sunshine. So like us, those of us as humans, we're outside breathing good, clean, fresh, warm air. We're outside engaged with the natural soils and the earth, where if there's dirt and microbes and funk and all that stuff, we're getting that. So we built a good resistance and a good tolerance and a solid immune system. So as humans, we're good. Our chickens are the same way. And a lot of the other farmers that I've spoken to, they're either, if they have to downsize, they'll downsize. The ones that can't hang in there, they're just not selling eggs anymore. Or they're seeing what they can do. But, you know, that's one of the other components to this is, you know, like you're saying, you back it up and you start asking yourself, where are the problems? Why are we being retroactive instead of proactive? Like, that's my issue. I don't have, you know, fortunately, you know, it's not been an issue for us and we're super conscientious about it. But, you know, if you go back and start looking at where some of the places are, they're not pasture raised farms, they're hothouse farms. So maybe what we really need to be doing is addressing those food shortage issues, addressing the cost issues. Those are separate and maybe more politically or dynamically done other ways. But, you know, maybe one of the other things we need to start really looking at is, where are we eating from and why are we not looking to eat in our food shed? Why are we not looking to support the local farmers? Because they're the one providing a nutrient dense product. Because my eggs are raw, meaning I don't pasteurize my eggs. They're pastured, meaning they're out on pasture, they're pasture raised, but I don't pasteurize. I don't heat treat my eggs. So, you know, we've got to look at a lot of different factors. If we're looking from a health and a nutrition standpoint, then $8 a dozen, which is like I said, what I sell mine for at my farm store, not on my website, because that's a good Lord, most of that's just shipping costs, which is a whole different issue.
Another animal.
I don't even want to go there at the moment. But, you know, maybe that's what we really need to be evaluating is, why are we looking at industrializing everything? Why don't we really start to look at, why aren't we feeding our community? I mean, I have a run on my eggs in the farm store. I've got them over there on a daily basis to get washed up and to get sold. So, you know, we know the demand is there and we know the demand won't leave. What I'm hoping is that in the bigger picture, separate from the dollar amount per dozen, that we are able to educate, inform, and share what's available within the communities that people know where their farmers are, because during COVID or the pandemic stuff, you know, people looked for their farmer, but as soon as they felt like some sense of normalcy, a lot of them were like, done. I don't need my farmer. I'll go back to the box store.
Right.
Well, hold up. You need us still. Like, if we're not, you know, it's kind of peep, 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 and repeat. Like, come on, everybody. Put your money where your mouth is.
So what is that? So the individual listening to this podcast, what should they be afraid of? and what is the fix?
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
Well, I think that, again, personal opinion, I mean, I do a lot of reading, probably way more than my brain should handle on a regular basis. But, you know, it's most days it's like constant. What do I think the fix is? I think the fix is that we all need to be honest and realistic about what we're eating, where we're getting it, and what we want. And it's not about money.
Before the fix, the fear, right? So everybody, the clamor for the stampede to go in.
Hang on. I'm going to interrupt you on purpose. The truth of the matter is that this country has the ability to feed itself without a problem.
Right.
Period. Yeah. We have ample farmers. We have ample meat. We have ample produce. We have ample everything that we need. And that's without importing it. So what we need to look at is not being afraid of not having food. What we need to be afraid of is why we can't get the food we need from our own communities, from our own country. Why are we having to seek food elsewhere so that we are dependent on something or someone not of our own control? Like, there's plenty of farmers in the state of Florida. There's plenty of farmers all over this country in every single state. Like, we have the ability to feed ourselves without importing stuff. That's what we need to look at. It goes back to the basics of self-sustainability. If we really want to be regenerative and we really want to be sustaining and be self-sustaining and vertically integrated, then we need to start at home. Hmm. And that's just my position on this, because I think it's a bunch of BS that, you know, I'm going through Facebook groups and I'm seeing the women in agriculture, the men in agriculture, the families in agriculture. Everybody's out there working their butt off to feed this country, and the people who are working for it are not the ones feeding the country. There's a whole lot of layers in between, and those are controls and stock gaps. And then we also have the whole issues of imports and exports. You know, it's, without going on different tangents for each one of those different things, the fear is, I think, is a somewhat created, fabricated fear that there's no food. We do have the food. We just need to make sure that the avenues of getting the food from the farm to the person that needs to eat it is done in a way that should be done correctly.
Right. There's two main factors there, from the layman standpoint, perspective, whatever. So I see that as being the actual physical labor and like fuel cost, mm-hmm. for example, right? Because you get a lot of people, the last two and a half years or 3 years, a lot of people stop working.
They have.
And, you know, and I'm not just talking about, you know, there's people who work on farms and there's people who don't work on farms, and everybody stopped working. And, you know, we hear about,
but we did.
Right. Yeah. No, it was contrived completely.
We didn't have a choice.
It was contrived. Everything was, definitely, self-induced. But then you're talking about, we started the segment with the looming food shortage, but then there's the diesel factor that, you know, is looming as well. So, I mean, you know, those two pieces of the puzzle are by and large two of the main culprits. And I'm sure you know better than me, but, two of the main culprits in why we're shooting ourselves in the foot or nailing our feet to the plywood.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of factors I personally think that one of the biggest problems or one of the biggest issues relative to the situation is the fact that, and this isn't new and this isn't pointing at any one direction, the fact is that real truthful, accurate information is not being disseminated in any way that is consistent in any location.
No, I feel like that's an up and down thing. In every category, we're not getting proper information.
Correct. And that's creating a sense of numbness for people. It's creating the fear. It's feeding the fear. There's just so many things that are going on about this. And when you start controlling people's food and you start limiting their access to food, that becomes very overwhelming. And because so many people don't know where their food actually comes from on a real simple level, it's just go to the store, buy it because the shelf is always full. I don't know how it gets there, but it's there. And then I go pick what I want and I walk out. So there's kind of a disconnect between how the food got there and an understanding of how it got there. There's a true disconnect on that. I think that that's one of the things that's not going to be helpful for people trying to figure out that whole thing, around food. I think when I talk to people, they're overwhelmed. They're just overwhelmed with trying to figure all these different moving parts out. And when you're playing with their food and their ability to feed their family, that's when it becomes way more stressful and way more anxiety ridden.
My mother-in-law is from Cuba. So, she lived the Castro life for a while. Yeah. And, when you talk to people like that with that experience, they're freaking out right now because they're seeing a lot of the same, data point.
But they've lived it.
They lived it. They saw how it came about and the turning of events and the change of events and all of the things that preluded, the actual starving of the people. Like if we're talking about food specifically,
Controls.
Yeah. The controls. So, and you talk about contrived or self-induced. It's like, there's a, it's not just here. It's all over the world. Push for those controls, and you get people who come from Venezuela, from Cuba, from some of these countries that deal with it. Man, I tell you, the writing is on the wall as far as they're concerned, and that should be everybody's motivating factor. Not to go down that road, but I mean, the reality is controls are controls. Centralized, there's a place for centralized governance. It's in your home. Not necessarily of the people, especially billions of people, or 300 million or plus for the if we're talking about the U.S. So at the end of the day, we kind of circle back to it. Go out there and meet your farmers. Go and introduce and don't just use them when you can't get something at the box store. It's necessary.
It is, but the other thing too is I don't sell anything. My responsibility is to inform, to share, to educate, to make people aware, or to provide information so that they can become more aware of what it takes to do what we do. And I battle that on a daily basis, predominantly through social media, some phone calls to the farm, chatting with people at the farm store. But I get a lot of questions on social media, and I try to take that opportunity to educate and share and inform, because I don't think people really realize how hard it is to grow or to raise the food that they are eating right now. It is not just difficult for them going to the grocery store. It's very difficult for us, because as farmers, we're being banged around a lot. Because there's a lot out there that's working against us as opposed to for us as smaller family farms, because not every area geographically is supportive of small family farms. So people, it would be really important for people to know that as farmers, you may come in, and in my case, actually, you pay less for a dozen eggs in my store than you do some of the big grocery stores because they're actually more expensive for an inferior quality egg. But people don't realize the all that it takes to do what we do every day. Like, it's just, physically. It is literally 24/7.
Yeah, physically and mentally, too.
It's mentally, it's financially, it's every aspect of everything we do on a daily basis. And I guess one, you know, somebody's position or argument could be, well, it's no different than me going in to do my job every day. Well, I understand
would,
that.
But I, you, would, I would.
You go in, right. You go in and you leave and you go home to a personal life. I don't have a personal life. I don't. I mean, that's my reality. If we have something planned and something goes wrong, whatever we had planned stops.
Now, wait a minute.
Because
you have a personal life. You're partying. Whatever. You're partying with the chickens. Come on, what are you talking about?
Oh well, yeah. I mean, you know, hey,
you're having a real, you know, a real course, a mother mother clucking time. I mean, come on,
mother. Yeah. Yes, you got it. Yeah, mother I'm cluck, not hanging with a hen.
Mother clucking, good time. Come on, what are we talking about?
Yeah. So that's important though, and it's not that I'm not looking for all it takes. That's not what I'm looking for. I just want people to know that those of us who take this very seriously and enjoy what we do, we believe, we engage every day in the responsibility that what we're doing is providing a nourishing opportunity for not only our families, but for those that we share this opportunity with. And that's the other thing, is that the farmers that I know do this seriously. The farmers here around me, when, even the little farmers, and when I mean little, I'm not in any way demeaning them at all. I think it's great because we all are needed. Like, I can't feed the world. It'd be great if I could, but I can't. So I need other farmers around me. We need other farmers around the country to feed our country. You know, I just want people to recognize the fact that that what we do, we take very seriously. This is a job, but more importantly, it's a passion and a profession. That what we do for them to feed everybody every day. And I take great pride in the quality of what we produce, but I also take great pride in the fact that the collective Circle C family appreciates what we do. That is one thing I can say, is that our Circle C family is truly, I work really hard to make sure that they're part of what we do. And I think that's another component, is the big box stores are in fact just a big box store, and they're just perceived as maybe just as a business. And yes, that's in fact what they are. But differently are the farmers that are feeding, because while we need to remain in business, the truth of the matter is that we're doing this for a reason. And we don't have to. Like, I could just feed my family, but we've taken it a step further to make sure we're feeding lots of families. And so that's important too. I would ask that people don't lose sight, is your farmer down the street, your farmer in the next county, wherever you're getting your eggs or your meats or whatever around you. Know that that farmer's doing that because they want to do this. They want to feed you.
It's definitely a passion. You have to have a passion for this.
Yeah, you do, because it's a relentless pursuit of perfection that never is acquired.
Because at the end of the day, your chickens have to eat, the cattle has to eat, the people have to eat, and it's never ending. So, you know, it's a circle, never ending circle.
Yeah,
so to speak.
It is. And, but you know what, for all of the other stuff that's going on, it, you know, most days it can be a whole lot of fun. I mean, it is rewarding despite all of the other stuff that goes on, and it is a rewarding opportunity. I do enjoy chatting with people, and I do enjoy having conversation on social media with people, and I do enjoy the calls or the farm store chats with people who are coming in to ask questions, because I think the one true upside to this has been that, whether it was a couple years ago or last year or it's now, if whatever reason puts you in a position in which you now see, hey, I'm I need to find those people around me that are feeding me. I need to see what farms are there. And while it may cost just a wee bit more or not, depending on what you're buying, it's important that I know who they are, kind of like you had mentioned before, but also that for them to see and talk to us as the farmer saying, hey, this is what we go through every day, or this is what we're doing to bring you that egg, or it takes me 2.5 to maybe 3 years to raise that cow to get that hamburger or that steak for you.
Right.
Like, as you talked about the eggs, you know, help people understand perspective. You know, help them understand it takes 8 to 9 months to raise a turkey, or it may raise, it's 3 or 4 months for that chicken, or it's 1.5 years for that sheep, or, you know, that lamb meat, or, you know, it's just, it's helpful because, you know, when I walk by or I talk to people about quality and quantity and portion sizing, which I know you've, you know, lived in that whole world as a chef, you know, it's really about understanding nutrition, understanding balance, understanding need, and really keeping that in perspective. Because when you go to take that 1 pound of ground beef and you don't eat all of it, some people are like, oh, I don't need it. I'm just going to throw it away. I don't want to deal with that. I want people to think about the fact that that ground beef took me 30 to 34 months to make. That's 2.5 years to get that burger on your plate. I want them to understand.
That was a life.
The value. Exactly.
It. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, my goal always is, while we're dealing in the current or the present of the situation, and there's some things we can control, most of it we can't. But relative to what we can, I want people to understand, let's talk about value. Let's talk about nutrition or nutrient density. Let's talk about what are we doing to keep a chemical-free farm, that where we're not using anything that's a sustaining item. You know, we don't use hormones or additives or fillers or, you know, any of that stuff. Antibiotics, we just don't do any of that stuff. So, you know, what are you getting for your money? Like, that egg that I'm getting, I may pay 3 or 4 or 6 or 10 cents more collectively for that one egg, but what am I actually getting out of that egg? I'm getting nutrients. I'm getting nutrition. I'm getting all the things that I need versus something else.
Yeah, I've seen a selection of the eggs that you that you're producing on the farm, and mm-hmm. you can just totally see the color difference on the yolk. I mean, it's a huge you can't not see it.
Oh, and Carl, that's a whole different conversation. But I'll give you the 30-second elevator thing on that. I get a lot of questions. They say, oh, your eggs are really, they're really bright, but they're not as dark colored as ones from the grocery stores. And I'm like, yes, I know that. Well, but they're not the same color. Yes, I know that. I don't want them to be the same color, because my chickens are actually eating pasture grass. They're actually eating flowers and bugs and grubs, and they're eating their rice-based feed, and they're out there enjoying themselves in the sunshine. They're not in a building being fed a controlled diet. It's got stimulants and artificial additive or non-artificial additives, just additives to artificially color the yolk of the egg.
That's so crazy.
So if you take my, I know, but believe it or not, people will actually say, I bought 12 eggs from you, Nicole, and I bought 12 eggs from the grocery store, and their eggs were differently colored, or their yolks were really, really dark in this color. And I'm like, yes. But you don't know what they were being fed. You don't know the conditions they were in.
I'm not going to name the brand, obviously. But there's a brand out there. I would never. But there's a brand out there.
I know.
That it's like a deep orange. It's actually, you feel good because, like, oh, wow, look at that. But mm-hmm. but unfortunately, there are truths to these things. And as you mentioned, it's probably food coloring of some sort. Not food coloring, but, you know, whatever substance, whatever they use to do that.
Right. It's something else in the feed that helps do that. But it also has to do with the fact that these animals are inside. So, and that's, all again, a whole different topic. But, you know, that's the question really is, Carl, is what do people really want? Do you want cheap food? Because for the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, there's been a lot of cheap processed food. And I don't know that that's got the outcome that people really want.
I can tell because when I look in the mirror, I'm not happy with it. I'm like, look at this guy.
Well, you're being funny.
I could have laughed. Yeah. So, I mean, I was expecting a little bit of a chuckle or something.
I am. I'm like, wait, you're being funny. But, you know, but that's the thing is that it, again, it's about balance and perspective. And you get what you pay for. So you may pay a little bit more. And right now that's the problem is that if everything is a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, it becomes a lot of more. And that lot of more ends up creating a situation where people are like, I don't have a lot of more. And so that's what, to me, that's the injustice of the dynamic that's going on right now, is that people shouldn't feel like they're being price hiked on because of a situation, no matter what. Like, we should be able to produce a high quality food in a way that is not going to make people have to make a decision between gas and food, right, or electric and food. Like, that's just not right. But relative to the egg shortage, there's going to be a supply and demand issue. But also, this is the thing that, this is the other thing. My eggs come out of the hen, and you've either gotten them within a day or two or whatever at the store, or you're getting them online, which is usually a couple of days, maybe 4 or 5, depending on when we gather to when we ship. And they're still super fresh. The stuff at the grocery stores, that stuff is typically 5 to 6 months old before it hits the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because of the backlog and the hold that's got to happen. So in distribution and transfer, you know, from one vendor to the next. So that's another perspective thing.
Yeah,
and that's one of the reasons why they're called dry.
Yeah, whole other deal.
Whole other, yeah.
Yep.
Whole other episode.
Yeah, you exactly. Know, so, which we should probably, you know, distribution and warehousing is its own probably series of episodes for sure.
Yeah, and we should definitely put that on the list of topics for us. But you know, I think for me, it really boils down to the simplicity of it. You are what you're eating. If you get good quality food, you don't necessarily have to eat a lot of it. That's the other thing. When you're eating foods that are healthy and nutrient dense, you don't necessarily need volume. You need quality over quantity. And that's the other component.
So, you know what we need to do? We need to figure out how to disseminate that information. We need to compile that data and be able to provide that to Joe and Jane consumer, right? You're talking about, mm-hmm. Nutrition densities and things like that. In the same vein, you grow, raise multiple animals mm-hmm. on your farm, right? So we're coming up on time. Why don't you kind of list off what you actually produce on the farm and how do you find it? Where do you get it? Just go to your website. Like, why don't you do a little bit of that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. So we have a farm store, which is located in Bonita Springs and here in Florida, Bonita Springs, Florida, which you can shop in there just like you can any other grocery store. We are open 6 days a week there. We are closed on Sundays for family day. And to be quite honest, I need a nap. And then on our website, which is eatcirclecfarm.com, then you can order all of our meats, our eggs, our honeys, everything. So we raise, we're the only farm in the country that has an on-farm USDA inspected facility for both red and white meat. And that's what makes us unique. And we raise all of our livestock. We harvest them on our farm. We butcher and package and ship directly to our Circle C farm family, to our consumers, our clientele, directly from our farm. So we do not work with any distributors. And I'm putting that out there because sometimes people will call and say, well, when are you going to get more of this in? Or when are you going to get a delivery of? So I want to make sure I'm clear. Eggs, honey, meats come off of my front yard. And
that's cool.
Some of the other things. Yeah, it is really neat and it's really unique. And we really take pride in that. And then some of the other things we have on the website, like butters and things like that, are amazing. But I do work with vendors because I don't have any dairy on the farm at this point. That is on my vision board. So at some point, hopefully down line, not too long from now, we'll have all the dairies and we'll have to be able to offer those. But we raise, as far as eggs, we have quail, chicken, and duck. Right now, the quail and the ducks are doing a little bit of weather transitioning issues. So I've not had as many of those. So if you, I'm just mentioning, because if you go to the website, you're going to see that those are out of stock. And that's why, for the moment, just click on notify when available. But we have chicken eggs. And then we have our beef, our lamb, pork, chicken. We'll have turkey back on the property for later this year. That's our goal, to have turkeys, not only for meat, but for the holidays as well. And then beef, pork, lamb, chicken, turkey, and then duck. So we'll do some harvesting of duck again in another month or so when they're big enough. And then we have our honey, because we have beehives on the property. And I think that sums it up for the meat that we offer.
So,
because we have other livestock on the property, but we don't consume them. Like we have guineas for our livestock. They facilitate the livestock guardian dogs protection on the property because they're great alarm systems.
Right.
We have donkeys for the same purpose. We have Maremmas, you know, that kind of thing. So,
donkeys are badasses. They're big deal.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. And my two are hilarious. So I try to get video of them. And of course, when I want them to talk, they don't. And when I don't want them, they do.
Like they'll whip.
You know how that goes.
Of course. And yeah, they'll whip a coyote, like no problem.
Oh yeah. 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 They take no prisoners, and that they actually run with the cattle. And so they are a great, great match to be out with the cattle, because they're out with they're protecting the cow, the mama cows and the calves. And we have a lot of new baby calves right now. So that's really cool to have them out there.
I love it. It's like West Side Story over on the farm. I love it. You know, just
it's so always an adventure.
It always is. And just for giggles, you know, the people who are listening to this, they need to understand the dedication of both you and I, because we're coming up into the 9 o'clock hour. Everyone out there, you know, Nicole's a farmer. She gets up early. Well, what I do, I get up early. We're up at like 4 a.m, people. And here we are at almost 9 o'clock at night doing this to bring content about food, farms, agriculture. I mean, I think what we're doing is we're doing the good work. What do you say?
I agree. You know, it's important. And again, it goes back to a sharing and telling and an educational opportunity to get that information out, but to get it accurately. And that's one of the things that you and I both have a passion for. We want people to ask the questions. We want them to know what we're doing. We want to be transparent in that way. And that's the only way. To go back to one of your comments before, is what's the fix, what's the fear? You know, how do we fix this? Carl, we fix this by continuing to educate people and to give them a glimpse into the backside of what we're doing or what it takes. I mean, most people don't ask me. They're like, oh, these eggs are great, or oh, these are wonderful, thank you. And I'm like, oh, you're welcome. But they don't stop and say, Nicole, how long did it take you to get this egg?
No, of course not.
Like, you know, so that's a perspective balancing opportunity for people to know that that egg took me at least 6 to 7 months. So when you go to the grocery store, the hens that laid that 12 count or that 18 count, those 12 or 18 hens took 6 months to start laying, or more. So that those are good things for people to know.
Yeah, 100%. So I think on our next episode, we'll get into some of these other little side pockets that we got into tonight. We're going to do a little powwow first before the next one and come up with some good, some more good content. Hey, listen.
That sounds great.
Yeah, we're finishing up here for tonight. Nicole, you are awesome. Okay.
And thank you, Carl. And you are as well.
I appreciate that. Let's catch up on side B, and we are out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.